Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. .podbean.com.
You're listening to Jenny Finch, crime writer, scholar, and commentator, with another classic book of the month on Southside Broadcasting.
And this month's book is Jen, A Border Collie's Tale by Peter Kerr. Subtitled An Old Farm Dog Reflects on Her Life, this is a rural memoir told from the collie's point of view. Jen is a lively and highly intelligent dog, but unable, or more likely unwilling, to herd sheep with the other dogs. A free spirit, she is sold to a local smallholder who's looking for a pet for their two sons. Jen settles into her new life with ease, adapting to some aspects and subtly altering others. From the start, she observes and comments on life around her, painting a picture of the family and their way of life, which contrasts considerably with her earlier days on the bigger farm. Kerr's earlier written work covers a broad range of genres, from memoir, like Thistle Soup, published in 2002, through crime fiction, with the Bob Burns series, to the historical novel, Song of the Eight Winds. Originally a farmer in Scotland, Kerr moved to Spain in the 1980s during the recession, and he has strong connections there, having lived in Mallorca for many years. Whilst in Spain, he produced a series of travel books that have been widely translated, winning the Bronze Prize in the 2002 American Book of the Year, and being shortlisted for the W.H. Smith British Book of the Year for a sequel. He is also a music producer, and we have him to thank for both the Royal Scots Dragoon Guards rendition of Amazing Grace, which remains the best-selling instrumental single of all time, and Fan Dabby Dozy, for which he wrote both music and lyrics.
There were two elements to that statement. One I agreed with, while the other I took exception to. I most certainly did smell nice, a lot nicer than Lady B and all that fake flowery scent of hers, but I wasn't at all happy about being called a working dog. As much as my initial impressions of the boss had been good, I realised then that if our future relationship was to get off to a positive start, I'd have to make an effort to enlighten him on my proper function in life. But not a problem. I was well up to the task. Then Lady B made another comment to the boss that irked me even more than her previous one. You know, I've been thinking, rolling over on their backs is actually a sign of submission in dogs, showing they feel subservient to you. And I'm sure that'll even apply to the flying version Jen just did. What on earth was she talking about? Big words, but it wasn't too difficult to work out what Lady B was driving at. Submissive? Subservient? Me? Oh, no. I didn't like the sound of this at all. Those descriptions may well have been correctly applied to dogs in general, especially to numpties like those work-happy brothers of mine. But to me? No way. But then I thought, hold on a minute here. No point in cutting off my nose to spite my face, to borrow another of those queer expressions humans like to use. Short-lived though it had been, that tickling my tummy experience had been really enjoyable. I'd never been treated to such a sensation before, and wouldn't have minded being treated to it again, soon, and often. And if this whole episode amused the boss as much as it seemed to, then maybe pretending to be submissive occasionally wouldn't be such a bad idea after all. Yes, that was it. I'd adopt the flying backflip as my own special trick and perform it for the boss every time I felt in need of having my belly rubbed. You bet I would. And if Lady B didn't feel comfortable about doing that little favour for me, I was pretty sure the boss would be only too pleased to oblige. So far, so good. And the outlook was about to get even brighter. I was already quite used to seeing young animals and birds, Lots of lambs, of course, and puppies too, with the occasional baby hare, a few grouse and partridge chicks, and even some ducklings at one of the little ponds you find here and there in the hills. But I hadn't come across young humans. So didn't know what to expect when the boss and Lady B told me I'd be meeting theirs any minute now. Sure enough, just when all the excitement of my flying backflip had died down, a car drew up at the gate and out clambered two of what the boys said were boys, which I immediately took to be juvenile males of the human species. The clue was in the smell, you see. Oh yes, a very interesting point, which I'll return to later. Anyway, the boys came hurrying towards us with expectant grins on their faces.
Jen can be seen as a very gentle memoir, though it has occasional sharp edges. In many ways, it can be compared to the works of Gervais Flynn and James Herriot, both of whom write about the Yorkshire Dales in a similar style. There is an unsentimental approach to life from all three authors, something that helps make Jen's voice more authentic. Whilst she responds with affection to her new family, she does not fall into the trap of being a human voice in an animal character. This said, she does develop and use an extraordinary vocabulary, despite frequently saying she doesn't understand many words. If Jen has a flaw, it is the limited development of the other characters. Lady B is reasonably well-rounded, but the others, including her husband, the boss, and the children, are really only background players. This is a pity, as Jen spends a lot of time with the boss, and much of the book concerns the day-to-day life on the small holding. Whilst we have a lot of detail about his activities, there is little of his character for us to empathise with.
By the time the boss came back a couple of days later, I was nicely settled into my new quarters and enjoying my daily routine all the more as well. It was November, as I recall, and the cattle were all snugly housed for the winter, so keeping an eye on them was a piece of cake. Oops, there I go, dipping into that bottomless pit of silly human expressions again. I can't help it, having heard so many in my time. Back in the early days, I could never fathom any of them out. But over the years, I've gradually managed to make some sort of sense of most. But if I'm absolutely honest, there are still a few that beat me completely. Okay, I admit it's just a fluke that a piece of cake was used in a statement about cattle, because I'm sure even the most uncountrified townies among you will know that there is actually such a thing as cattle cake. And I can tell you in passing, if you're interested, that I've tasted it and it's about as mouth-watering as that hay I told you about, but with an added squirt of engine oil or something. Blech! Usually, though, there's never even such a flimsy connection as that between the saying and what's being talked about. Take, for instance, a couple I borrowed earlier. No skin off my nose and cutting off my nose to spite my face. I mean, in the first example, I was talking about Lady B cleaning up a vomit I'd already cleaned up. And in the other, I was thinking twice about taking the hump at being called subservient for doing a flying backflip. Is there a link to anyone's nose in either? No. And don't get me started about being as green as your cabbage looking, or that other one twisting somebody round your little finger. What the hell's all that about? Humans. They never fail to bamboozle me with their silly sayings. On the subject of your little finger, though, I'm reminded of a thought I've pondered during many a quiet moment of late. What if dogs had fingers? Intriguing, eh? It was an old Labrador called Sam that first got me toying with the prospect. See, you may think us farm dogs are a bit cut off from what's going on in the wider world, not being in regular contact with other dogs and all that. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. Not in my case, anyway. I mean, I've been to boarding kennels a couple of times, and the humans who visit us here at Cuddynuik often have dogs with them too. So I'm as worldly wise as I need to be. I certainly am. So don't you worry about that. Anyway, this old lab called Sam used to come here with his human, a little female one who dropped by occasionally to do Lady B's hair, whatever that meant. Something to do with making it look different, I think. But it always looked much the same to me when they eventually emerged from the house. It just didn't blow in the wind as freely and had a smell that irritated my nose, although it didn't seem to bother old Sam. Sam, by the way, was the laziest dog you ever met. Honest, if you knew him, you'd say the same. All he ever wanted to do was eat, then lie about, sleeping and passing wind.
Jen Pateson paints an unromanticised picture of life in rural Scotland, with some very funny events and occasional heartbreaks. Using the collie's viewpoint allows a different perspective, and Kerr handles this with great skill. If you are looking for some clear-eyed escapism or a gentle read about a calmer way of life, this is the perfect book for you. Be aware, however, Jen, the narrator, is 12 years old, a very good age for a collie.
And so we actually move on to the panel, and we'll be hearing, as I say, in a few moments, of course, from Jessica, what she makes of Jen. Not written about our very own Jen, of course, Jenny Finch, who delivered that expertly, but it's been wonderfully awesome anyways. Let's turn to our usual correspondents. We've got a newbie as well on the team who we'll introduce in a few seconds, but let's go to Robert Nichols first and foremost. Rob, what did you make of Jen, A Border Collie's Tale?
I enjoyed it, Alex. It's not every day that you look at this perspective from a dog, dog's point of view. And I've never actually owned a dog. So I presume if I did, then I would recognise an awful lot more traits in Jen. But I did very much enjoy it. And the fact that it was the whole life cycle and just seeing everything through the eyes of an animal that's about a few inches off the ground is interesting.
Yeah, certainly as somebody who once owned a kind of cross collie breed who was much beloved and much affectionate to many, many years ago, but I could recognise a whole heap of those particular aspects. Jenny, of course, is a canine friend and has lots of canine folk as well. I mean, initially, when I was first introduced to Peter Kerr, and I'll declare an interest here. I mean, I've known Peter for about a decade in various ways. And there was a feel when I read his Tales in Mallorca and so on that I thought, well, this is nice. It's all very pleasant. And I really always felt that it's a guilty pleasure. But you kind of you go into the vortex of his a description, and it becomes a really good read, and it actually packs an emotional wallop, which I really was I expecting it. I think actually, in terms of the final delivery, I felt he might have actually taken the easy option and maybe decided to avoid that. I mean, no spoilers, but let's turn to somebody who almost could be actually the chosen companion of a border collie called Bo, who I kind of thought initially, it crossed my mind, this could be Bo's story. Robin Pierce, welcome to your first ever book of the month. What were your thoughts on this particular thing?
Well, when you first approached me with the idea of doing this particular show as a guest and what the book was, as you know, I was pretty reluctant, not because this is not my usual sort of genre, but I tend to avoid animal specific books because I find them very hard to read, because you know inevitably they end pretty much the same way, which I find very hard to take.
For You've all never recovered the trash, from Ring of Bright Water, obviously.
I saw the film. I was about 10 or 11. I was emotionally scarred. I'm always on the side of the animals because I'm very much an animal lover, despite the brash, cocky exterior, which you know and wish would go away. So I agreed, having done the one thing that I never do, and that's check out the end of the book first, because it was going to be harrowing. I wouldn't have done this appearance because I do not want to appear a blubbering mess. I have some self-respect. But I have a border collie. She's right here beside me now. She's 10 years old. So, you know, there are fewer years ahead than there are behind. And it's something that I'm only too aware of. And it's something that I don't want to think about. But what Peter Kerr does in this book is he gives the border collies' point of view. Now, border collies, as we know, are incredibly intelligent dogs. And you only have to spend a small amount of time with them to know that there is an awful lot going on between the ears. And, you know, I've often wondered, I mean, my name for her is Bo. I've often wondered, what is her name for me? And what does she actually, she follows me everywhere. You know, what does she actually think about me? Does she think, oh, not this again, you idiot. You know, or look, can we go this way instead of that? You know, she seems to be sort of nudging me along when she wants to do something specific. And I found that the trait that Peter Kerr actually brought to light in his book, I could apply very easily to this dog of mine. But even that is up for question. Is she my dog or am I her human? Who knows? I suspect she even could opine on that. But it's a book that I liked far more than I thought that I would. And it's just another thing to add to a very long list of things that Alex Lefchuk has roped me into doing that I didn't want to do, but I'm glad I did.
Interesting enough. I mean, would you like to just share the tale, Robert, of how effectively after you'd had your challenging health period a few years ago, Jen kind of relates to that, and obviously with your children and the family. How did Bo relate to that?
Oh, yeah. About 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, I suffered a heart attack. And I was hospitalized for a week and I had a stent put in. I had to go back later for another one. But when I came out the first time, I mean, I was still pretty ill. And I have never seen a dog give as big a welcome and be as stuck to me as this one. We had a dog before her called Tess, who is a cross Labrador border collie. And I thought she was, you know, closer than most dogs, but this one has been off the scale. Now, I think that what Alex is referring to is a couple of days after I came out of hospital. Of course, you get visits from the nurse to take your blood pressure and see how you're getting on and stuff like that. And on her first visit, I was sat on the couch in the living room and Bo was sat beside me. The nurse came in. Bo eyeballed her instantly. She sat down beside me and put the cuff on. Bo at this point had maneuvered herself between the nurse and me. Now, she never once growled. She didn't do anything like that. But the nurse actually asked me, you know, is your dog all right? I said, yeah, she in the way. No, I don't want to move her. I said, okay. The only thing is, she's not going to go for me, is she? I said, well, no, she's never gone for anybody. Why do you ask? She's staring at me. Well, that's because, you know, you're doing something on my... Yes, but she hasn't blinked.
So, Jenny, there we are. I mean, you've heard, obviously, from Robin. I mean, I'm going to share tales as well, but I shot at this moment. And Rob, obviously, impacted by the scenario. What about yourself as a dog owner? Or is it a case of, well, when it comes to intelligence, my Tibetans are far superior?
Well, yeah, we think the Tibetan dogs are the most intelligent of all of them. Collies are extremely smart, but they're slavish.
Slavish? What would Jen say to the word slavish?
They are. You know, you say run, stop, click your fingers, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, Jen is not. Jen is closer to the kind of Tibetan that you get. With our dogs, you do negotiate with them and they will make it very clear what they want to do. And if they don't want to do it, they won't. And then they'll get up and do it and come back and sit in front of you and go, because I wanted to. The dogs that we've got at the moment, the Tibetan monks that bred them originally, said they had produced a small being that was part dog, part cat, and part monkey. So that tells you roughly what they're like.
So genetically enhanced beings. Astonishing. Rob, Let's turn to yourself. I mean, in terms of characters, obviously, as Jenny said, we have the mistress of the house articulated. How did you feel that sort of went? Were you kind of transported to this kind of Scottish Highlands?
Yeah, and obviously in the first place we're with the old shepherd on the top of the hills, and then we go to within smelling or within distance of the sea, don't we? And with a new family. And yeah, I like the relationship between the two females, between the dog and Lady B, was it? But again, yes, it's, I understand about the maybe not rounded characters, but it is very much from Jen's point of view, isn't it? It's very much what Jen knows about the people, and what she needs to know about them. And as we've just said, she's a free spirit. And that's why she can't stay on the sheep farm any longer, because she's not really interested in being told what to do as far as rounding up sheep. And she's the boss, isn't she? And she's the entertainer for the kids. It's interesting because she doesn't really understand why she does many things. She sort of has like almost like an instinct within her that she goes through all the cars, or she. And she grabs the ball, she flips over, and she kind of thinks to herself afterwards, why did I do that? But then instinct takes over and she does it again and again. So she's obviously the main character in the book. It's all about her. It's through her perspective and it's through her thoughts. And it's interesting that as she explains how language is a human thing, it's not a dog thing, and how she has to... She's basically using the TV, isn't she? She's basically using information that she gets sort of secondhand from the TV as to be able to communicate through onto a book. I'm not sure how she writes it down, but yeah. I agree with what Robin says, that initially when I got the book, I thought, oh, Alex has given us quite a sort of sentimental...
Your words, yeah. Robin, your words, Robert, were, and I quote, is this going to be a Shaggy Dog story?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it did. Yes, initially. But it draws you in, and it's a whole life story, and it's really entertaining. It's warm, it's funny, and it's obviously has its sad moments.
It's not a children's book, is it, Jenny? I mean, despite the fact that we've been giving it a very kind of pleasant, almost Disney-fied approach, the language that's used is industrial. It's quite robust. There's a rationale for that, and I think it's worth noting that we did have another book that was suggested to us that in the end the four of us actually had a look at and decided we can't go for that for a variety of reasons, not least of which was actually the quality of the writing. But in terms of this particular aspect, there are a couple of hard-hitting punches. I mean, it's a sort of semi-spoiler, but what happens to one of the children, I think, which is just dropped in from the perspective of the experience of Jen and her pup and so on, I thought was extremely effectively developed. I mean, and it's almost as though it's a sugar-coated challenge. I mean, did you feel that Peter was effective in delivering that, Jenny?
I think he was, but I think he could have made more of that. That was one of the points where I thought, well, hang on, there's a lot more depth in that, and a little more depth would be good. But I certainly agree with you. It's not a book for children. It's a book for adults.
Or maybe young adults. Would they sort of respond, do you think? So maybe 14 plus?
Very possible, yes. Yeah. 14, 15, 16 up, I think.
Yeah. Well, we have reached the stage and we've obviously heard from Jessica her particular viewpoint, but let's go for those quantitative aspects. We do this, as Robin is aware, with Resonance Rewind. We've done it right from the start with respect to Book of the Month. Rob Nichols, would you like to give us your score for Peter Kerr's Jen, A Border Collie's Tale?
I would go for 7.5 out of 10.
Again, points could be deducted because of course, the Royal Scots Dragoon Guards, or indeed the Crankies and Fan Dammy Dozy. I don't know. I mean, I think you should be very proud to have that in your oeuvre. It's very good. And indeed, I know Peter actually is. Robin, what about yourself?
Well, for a book that I didn't want to read initially. And as I'm going through it, I'm still reading it. It's delightfully non-anthropomorphized. It's not, as we said, Disney-fied. You know, the dog doesn't start singing. There are no little woodland animals that are helping it clean the house. I've really been impressed, because one of the things that struck me most, I mean, like with the child and the pup, is I thought that was dealt with the way it should be dealt with, because animals tend not to linger on sentimentality as far as we know. And this is basically an older dog narrating her autobiography. It's her story, not the other. It's her impression of other people, but it's not their story. It's her story. And surprisingly enough, and nobody's more stunned than I am, I'm going to go ahead and give it a 9.
And I indeed will also go for a 9. It doesn't get the 10 because, again, I would have liked to have seen, you know, just a kind of postscript in terms of Jen and Bear. But anyway, that's by the way, I'm overly sentimental. Jenny, is it a case of no messing about? Your score for this as a Tibetan owner is?
7.5, like Rob.
So what does Jessica Burtis make of Peter Kerr's epic tale of, obviously, the faithful canine Jen? Let's find out. Jessica, your thoughts on this little text?
So I think this story is such a mix of being very wholesome and just being also absolutely emotional. Especially the last third of the book just hits like a truck. But I think that this is, it's a very unique way of narrating from an animal, because I think Jen's narration is very much like a stream of consciousness. And I imagine a dog would think like that. It's not very it's not super organized, I guess. It's very much just kind of you go along with the story, just whatever she's seeing, and it makes it interesting. So that the narration is very fun. I did have a little bit of trouble when the dialogue was written in the accent. That was a little bit difficult to understand, but I think you get a bit used to it. Jen was, of course, extremely free-spirited, sassy, and very frank. I love border collies. I used to want one when I was really little. So it was really sweet getting to read about a border collie. And I love how Jen is just extremely proud of being a collie. And she has very high standards for herself. It's very cute. And I think that the story had some absolutely gorgeous descriptions of settings. I think some highlights for me were when Jen was enjoying the belly rubs, because she is a very high class border collie. But then she was, you know, enjoying the belly rubs, and that was very cute. Also when she greeted the two boys on the farm, and you know, the boy too had a history with the previous dog passing, but then Jen warmed up to him and he was so happy. I think that was just so adorable, and it just warmed my heart. I loved reading about them all sitting by the fire together. I think that was just a beautiful moment, and it makes me want a dog. but it sounds very just like wholesome and Christmassy. And I loved the part, absolutely loved the part where Jen was talking about how dogs love human laughter, and that dogs laugh too, and that when dogs hear laughter, it sounds sparkling. I thought that word sparkling was just such an interesting descriptor for laughter, and, you know, just thinking that, you know, animals might enjoy human laughter was just so sweet. I think it was pretty funny when Jen, you know, she was, she's very high opinion of herself, but then she went and after being washed with some medicine, she went and immediately rolled around in manure. And she was just content to be outdoorsy. And I think she's just a very independent dog, and it's hard to not like her. and her whole affair with Boris the Afghan hound. It was so funny hearing about a dog romance. It was just cracking me up how she kept daydreaming about this dog. And also how she would like trash talk cats. She like really hated cats. I love cats. I have one, but it was so funny just to read about like this dog, just like cats. After that, I think it was just an emotional affair, because after that, we just had, you know, the puppy incident pass. And then I was like with boy two, it just broke my heart because I had remembered like that moment when she first met him, you know, and to have that moment where, I guess spoiling it, like where he passed in such a horrible way, so young, like that was just, I hadn't expected that at all. And around this time I started to realize that Jen probably was not going to make it out of this story. And I wrote in my notes, destroyed, when at the end, Jen passes. And yeah, I was just like, when I finished the story, I was just sitting on the couch crying because I was just like, my emotions were so ravaged. But I think it was a very good book. I mean, it got a serious emotional rise out of me. So I think I got very attached to the characters. So it was very good. Kind of reminds me of the Mr. Chip story that we read that was very emotional at the end. So. But yeah, I think it was very cute, very wholesome, very, very hard at the end, but very worth reading.
And you could, of course, draw the line that just as Mr. Chips was educating people, Jen in many ways was educating in her own way the family that she'd chosen, or chosen her and went through that. As we discussed with Rob and Jenny, of course, equally emotionally impactful from that point of view. And I wasn't expecting it because, as I say, you kind of go through initial things and you think, fine, okay, it's a by-the-numbers approach to writing from an anthropological perspective about an animal's perspective on life. Disney have made an entire empire, broadcasting empire, about doing this, as many people who have actually seen Bambi and never recovered when he loses his mother. Again, you know, we'll echo on that side of things. But I think what Peter's done here is something which, it's not a book for young readers, but it's a book for possibly young adult readers, perhaps. I think you'd need to be over 14 to begin to appreciate the kind of lines there. And obviously the industrial language which is used, which initially I thought, is this going to work on that? But it kind of, in the context of the whole sequence, it does tend to fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really surprised when I when they were using some sailor language, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's definitely not a children's book. I think when I went into it, I thought this is going to be like a book that children could read, I guess, because I'm so used to animals being the narrators for little kids, which I guess is like a very interesting kind of point to think about, why like so many stories that have animals, like where they kind of make animals very human-like are for children, and why it's kind of regarded as like a child subject instead of one that adults could read, because I think this is very approachable for adults. At first I was like, oh, you know, try it, it's a kid's book, blah, blah, blah. And then I started to realize it was a bit heavy, and like the themes in it were very interesting, and it was a lot more complex than I had originally expected. So I think it's a good way for an adult to kind of, or a young adult to maybe break down some of their kind of genre expectations, you know, and what they make assumptions about narrators. So I think that's very fun.
And anthropomorphic or otherwise, it's a way forward. So allowing for that, Jessica, and who knows, I mean, Peter has been a part of the Midweek Drive in times past, so hopefully he'll come back again in the not distant future, so we can maybe quiz him a bit more, in a bit more detail about his writing and so on. What would you score this out of 10?
You know, I have to give it a 9. It's not a book I would recommend somebody go into completely lightheartedly, because at the end it will just absolutely destroy you. But it is a very fun ride along the way, and you get to just, I guess, see a book from a whole different perspective, and it will break expectations. And it makes me want a pet border collie. So all over again. Solid 9. A very solid 9.
Still, so it's interesting the sort of the connection to that. Okay, Jenny, next up, a novelization which led to an Academy Award development by a director who's actually directing the Eternals movie from Marvel. This is as far away from the Eternals as you could ever get. And it is a movie which, Robin will confirm when we reviewed the movie back in the world of movies and royals with Richard Fitzwilliams, I was hard pushed to. I think I might have given it a 6 on the grounds of far too much excretion and various other bits and pieces. Exactly, it was there. So who knows what I'm going to make about the book? Interesting reverse. Normally, book of the month, we set the tone, and the movie is reviewed afterwards. But Jenny, what is next month's book of the month going to be?
Right. Something that surprised me when I read it about how much I enjoyed it. It's Nomadland by Jessica Brody.